Is everybody else in here cold? I mean, this is a meat locker. My gosh. Right around halfway through lunch, it started getting cold in this hotel, so they must have thought it was hot, too warm earlier. Anyways, my name is Scott Hunter, and I'm the Director of Program Management at Microsoft on the .NET platform, and I'm here to talk about a lot of stuff that's going on in .NET today. And let's just start. First off, this is a slide from the previous talk that I did today. I'm showing it mainly, if you want to try some of the stuff that I'm going to show today, grab that VS 2017 15.3 preview. You can install that side by side with a regular VS 2017. You don't have to have the, it doesn't replace the one that you have on the machine. So you can try it if you want. And let's go. So this is just some fun stuff that I like to show when I talk about .NET, because we totally open sourced .NET Core about 2 years ago, and you can kind of see the growth in open source around .NET since then. Basically, that big first spike up as we fully open sourced the platform. One of the cool things about that is we actually have a cool partner, Samsung. Samsung is basing all their Tizen devices on .NET later this year, so you can tell your wife or your partner that you need a new Samsung TV because you want to run .NET on your TV. So I know I'm going to do that with my wife. and you can see we have a variety of partners we have here, Red Hat, Samsung, Unity, Google. we were really happy to see this. This is .NET Core, came out last June, and in Stack Overflow's most loved frameworks, it came in number 3 for the first time, even though it's only been out for half a year. This is new. Oh, that was quick. That is the first time I've ever had a fire alarm during a talk. So that's. I think it was the AC. I'm gonna. The building technically got so cold that the fire detector froze, causing this alarm. we just need a hurricane warning next, and we'll have done it all. Okay, back to things. So we were happy to see .NET Core be number 3 on the list. And we're happy to see C# stay up as one of the most popular languages out there for programmers. This is really cool. At Microsoft, it's fun to have bragging rights. Our tech is the number one tech on Hacker News, and Hacker News is kind of where all the alpha devs kind of live out, and so it's fun for us to be the leader there. And we have some cool quotes from a couple of our customers. Raygun's one of my favorite ones. They're a customer that moved from having an app that was Java, no JS based, to, and they moved to .NET Core, and they went from 1,000 requests a second to 20,000 requests a second by making that change. They have a very async app, which was did not lend itself well to Node.js, and so that's why the numbers are so crazy there. And some other cool quotes too, but I'll just move through those. This is something that I'm really happy about. If you've been using our tech for a while, let me bring a browser up here. If you've been using my tech for a while, we used to have a group in Redmond called Patterns and Practices, and they would put out these books every year or two about building applications, either secure applications or web applications and whatnot. And they do different stuff now. And so, but I hear from customers all the time that they would love to get more information from us on how to build things like microservices and containers, build web applications, build mobile applications, transition an application from on-premise to the cloud. And so we've got this new part of my website. It's on dot.net/architecture. Just go to the dot.net website. Go to the very top. There's this architecture button. And there's a whole bunch of ebooks here. You can download these things, print them off if you want, read them on your devices. There's a sample apps associated with each of these as well. So there's a full sample for each of these working in GitHub. So if you want to go see what a full microservice containerized .NET Core application looks like, you can download and try that if you just want to see some of the web stuff. And this is an area you're going to see us as a team continue to invest in, providing awesome guidance on how to build apps on .NET. And so I'll jump back over here. So very super happy to have that site up live. As I said, it's available now. You can see, you take a picture of the URL if you want. And you will see more and more stuff here. So right now the books are up there. We're in the process of building on what we call a bunch of patterns. People that want to do like health check of their application, they want to do queuing their application. We're going to build these as part of this site. And then these things will move into the actual frameworks. And you're going to continue to see us add more and more content here. So afterwards, if there's any areas that you guys have feedback that you'd love to get some content up there, come by, stop by, let me know what you're looking for, and I'll get it on our list. This is probably the biggest thing in the .NET platform that I can think of. Last year at Build, we announced .NET Standard, and it was all because as the .NET team, we're all looking together at our product, and we're like, dang, we have a lot of .NETs. We have .NET Framework, we have Silverlight, we have Windows Phone, we have .NET Compact, we have Mono, we have .NET Core. Each of these .NETs exists. They all have different amounts of code or API surfaces inside of them, and so we want to try to reconcile .NET, so you only have to learn one .NET no matter where you're at. And so we introduced this concept of .NET Standard. And the idea is you basically, it's one set of APIs you learn, and you can take your knowledge, you know, if you're a web guy, you can be building web apps, and you can decide to go become a mobile person, and all the same APIs, all the same knowledge that you have just transfers with you to that. And really, we're trying to do this for our ecosystem, because we think if you're an author of a NuGet package, if you actually support .NET Standard, that means your NuGet package works on all the platforms by default. This is actually an evolution of portable class libraries. That was the way that you shared code in .NET before. And if you built Xamarin apps before, you would use these things. But it was pretty constrained, because as you checked more frameworks, you got less and less APIs. And by the time you were done, you had string. And so this is the opposite. So this is what the picture kind of looks like. Whether you're building Windows desktop applications, cloud, UWP, iOS, Android, or Unity with games, same APIs, same tools, everywhere. The best way to think of .NET Standard, a lot of folks get confused about .NET Standard. The best way to think about it is it's an API spec. It's like HTML5. It basically says, hey, if you want to be called a .NET, you have to implement all of these APIs. And that's kind of what it really is. And so at Microsoft, we're making sure that all of our teams, that's the .NET Core team, the .NET Framework team, the UWP team, we announced at Build last week that later this year, if you build UWP applications, they will have all the same APIs that are in .NET Standard, which is, if anybody's tried to build a UWP application, you're probably frustrated because all your .NET knowledge doesn't make sense there because they took all the APIs away. So the APIs are all coming back. And this is just a point saying nothing changes. .NET just works how you would expect it to. You have your apps, you reference a library, and that library can use existing DLLs all the way back to 2002. It can be existing portable class libraries. All the pieces just work together. And the way this actually works is there'll actually be a NuGet package that you'll actually install in your application that enables .NET Standard. And you'll put this NuGet package in, and then your DLL or your app is a .NET Standard application. And we do a bunch of magic. So technically, that .NET Standard.dll, that is the contract DLL. So all the APIs that are supported in .NET Standard are in that DLL. And what happens is your application references that. When you call into that, it then calls into the underlying platform, .NET Framework, .NET Core, et cetera. And we do the inverse of this as well. All your apps that work today reference a library called MS CoreLib. And we have a special one of those that we ship in this NuGet package that your app talks to, which then calls into this DLL. So that's the magic we do to make all this work. And so let's play with that. So there's two things I want to show here. I want to start off with this app. This is kind of an interesting app. Who in the room has built a WinForms app? The rest of you are lying. You've all. Everybody's built a WinForms app. Our data shows this is the most popular application type in Visual Studio. So this is an old app. And this is what happens when you take a WinForm app that was built in like 2002 and you run it on a high DPI monitor. It's not supposed to look like that. There's actually a checkbox list that's hiding on the right side behind all that stuff. The list box in the upper left is supposed to go to the bottom of the screen. So things are kind of a mess. And this is because WinForms was created in a time when there was no high DPI. And so we just shipped as part of the creators update of Windows 10, we shipped .NET 4.7 with that. And check this out. I can take that same app, and if I come over here and I retarget it to 4.7 and let things complain, and I run the app again, look at that. So what happens is if you take a WinForms application and you retarget it to .NET 4.7, on a Windows 10 machine running Creators Update or later, basically we have full support for high DPI inside of WinForms. And the way this actually works is we had this is actually a lot of work. We worked very, very closely with the WinForms with the Windows team to get us some scaling APIs that let us actually scale stuff in a way that actually makes the app look really, really good. And so that's what makes this work. So, and that's what you get when you use 4.7 with high DPI. So back to the .NET standard thing. So I've got a version of that app that right here. And that app, this is going to have the broken version of the UI, but that app, when I press the load button, it goes and creates data sets and data tables. This is old code that I found from a demo from years and years and years ago. And so here this kind of is. You can see I've got my data set. I'm reading XML in. If you're a .NET Core customer or playing with ASP.NET Core today, you're going to find that you could not even do this because there is no XML support in the .NET Core. There is no support for data tables and data sets in .NET Core. But we're kind of announcing as part of this that as part of build last week, we announced .NET Standard 2.0. And this is probably my most exciting moment here is this is when we took all the APIs that exist in .NET Framework and all the APIs that exist in Xamarin. We took the intersection of those two things, and that built the surface area that we're now calling .NET Standard 2.0. And so basically, if you've used .NET Core today, you're going to find that about 20,000 APIs come back to you that you would not have had before. We went out and looked at the actual NuGet package, all the NuGet packages in the world, and about 70% of all the NuGet packages in the world are .NET Standard 2 compliant today, which means you can take a .NET Core application and use all of those NuGet packages out of the box. The ones that don't work are ones that have taken dependencies on some platform specific thing. Maybe it's they took a dependency on Windows for WinForms or WPF. They took a dependency on one of those things, and that's why they would not be. That's why it's not 100%. And this is kind of what I was showing. XML came back. All the serialization comes back. All the networking comes back. All the I/O threading, core. And so if you've not tried .NET Core, now will be the time to try it because suddenly it has all the same APIs that you would expect coming from the .NET Framework world. So let's go back to VS and let's try that. So I've got my customer app, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a brand new project here. Let me just make sure I'm in good shape for this. Good. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create, there's this new notion in VS of .NET Standard. So that's the magic in VS 2017. Go there, and that's how you can create a class library that is shareable across all these different platforms. And so let's call this thing data layer. And then all I'm going to do is I'm just going to take my data code that's doing all that Northwind stuff, and I'll just drag it over here into data layer. And we'll remove the unused class that we're not using. Okay. And now I can remove that as well. I don't need that inside of my WinForm app anymore. And what we'll do is we'll just reference this library, just like you would expect. Add a reference. Yeah, this is not so exciting, I know, at this point, but it gets exciting as soon as I'm able to add the reference to an ASP.NET Core application. So let's just still run this thing. Loads data still, so it's good. Still works. And while we're at it, let me point out a few more things too. Is this .NET Standard library, another cool benefit of this world as well, is we're building the ability to make NuGet packages directly into Visual Studio. So notice here, I can come over here and decide I want to basically have a couple choices. Every time I do a build, I can have this make a NuGet package for me on the fly. I can require a license. All the things you would actually fill in to make a NuGet package, I can do right here. I can also right-click on my project, and I can just say pack, and that will actually go build me a NuGet package. The result of that is, you can see it down here at the bottom. So I easily took a class library, I made it .NET standard so it runs on all the .NETs. I right-click on it, and I click pack, and now I've got a NupKeg that will run everywhere. But let's make this more interesting. Let's close this down a little bit. Let me add another project here. And now what I'll do is I'll go to .NET Core, and I'll choose an ASP.NET Core project. And we'll just do empty and make sure that we support ASP.NET Core 2. I'm on that preview build, and because I'm on that preview build, I have access to ASP.NET Core 2. And if you're a .NET Core user, you know, you would never be able to call things like data sets. I'll come here. So I'll let it settle down for a second. It's doing a package restore. And I'll just add a reference to that class library. And now you'll see that a full framework application, I have a class library that can be shared between that full framework application and a .NET Core application. I could also share that same library, you know, obviously to a Xamarin application as well. So there it goes, it's finished. So let's add the reference to the data layer. And this will be showing me using data sets in .NET Core. And all I'll do here is replace this text with Northwind, my data dot get customers. Then I'll set this as a starter project. And I run it. And this is .NET Core using really, really old APIs. Good APIs, though. Bingo, good. So if you're playing with .NET Core, grab these bits and you have all the APIs you'd ever want back. So that is that. Also, last week at Build, we announced .NET Core 2 becoming available and preview today. It's going to ship this summer. A lot of folks might be asking, wow, that's a pretty fast move. You just shipped .NET Core in June of last year. But most of my customers don't think I really shipped it in June of last year. VS 2017 was the first version of VS that had .NET Core support built into it. That shipped in March. And so a lot of folks think it's like, hey, March, and we're already in May. We've got a new version. The reason we are calling it a 2.0 is because of support for .NET Standard 2.0. We think that this is really, you know, for a lot of customers, this will be the 1.0 of .NET Core because it has all those APIs supported in the product. You know, another thing that we did is we decided to ship .NET Core as an entity. It used to be that .NET Core did not contain ASP.NET Core or EF Core. You had to go download those separately. We now put all that together in .NET Core. You install that on your machine. You get all of our tech. Another big thing that you get in .NET Core 2 or ASP.NET Core 2 is you get something we call automatic diagnostics. And I will drill in and explain that in a second. You get a new thing called Razor Pages, which is an easier way of writing web apps in ASP.NET Core, and you get EF Core 2 as well. This is kind of a cool slide here. If you built an ASP.NET Core 1.0 application today, it kind of looked like this in your CS proj. I don't know how I would know to reference ASP.NET Core 1.1.1 or ASP.NET Core MVC 1.1.1.2. We looked at this and said, that's ugly. That should be simpler. And so this is what it looks like in a 2.0 project. You just reference the one ASP.NET Core all, boom, you get the whole thing, and anybody can write this, and it's simple. So we're trying to simplify things. I'm going to jump ahead in this deck for a second. And I'm going to talk about diagnostics and about automatic diagnostics. So has anybody in the room tried App Insights? A couple of hands. Has anybody in the room been bitten by Visual Studio having a checkbox to add App Insights? And next thing you know is you've got this, it added all this junk to your project, and you're like, I'm going to create another project to make sure I check all those boxes off because I don't want that stuff. So we were looking as a team and thinking about how we think about diagnostics in our product. And actually, also inside of Visual Studio 2017 as well, we actually turned App Insights on by default for all web projects. And we didn't do that because we're trying to force you to use App Insights. A lot of folks aren't aware that App Insights actually works locally as well. And so we enabled the scenario because we actually thought that people would want to use App Insights when they're doing local development on their own machine. Maybe your app never goes to Azure. Doesn't matter. You can still use it. And so we enabled it by default, which meant we stuck it in your project, and there was package references and stuff like that. And we got feedback saying, I don't like having this thing shoved in my face. And so we kind of stepped back and said, hey, how do we think about diagnostics, you know, all up? And kind of the way we think about it is diagnostics should be easy. We should not require you to modify your application at all to have diagnostics. You should not have to republish your app to have diagnostics. So we showed a bunch of cool tech we have now where if you take an ASP.NET Core project or an ASP.NET Framework project and you publish it up to Azure, and maybe you didn't turn App Insights on, great, you don't have to turn it on. If you want to turn it on, you go to the portal, the Azure portal, and you click the Enable App Insights, and it just comes on. No republish of your app, no modifying your app, no any of that stuff. You just can turn it on and off from the portal. The next thing we looked at is, you know, if you look at the way that we diagnose applications and web applications today, before I joined Microsoft, I ran a couple of web properties myself. And I remember I still ran those even the first couple of years I was at Microsoft. I'd come home at night, and I'd go check the event log on my web server and see, you know, what crashes were there and try to go figure out what was causing those problems. But you kind of heard my theme there is I had to go through a series of log files to figure that out. Yuck. Can we use tech to solve this? And as part of turning on the App Insights automatically, we can also install a profiler into your application. And the profiler is a very lightweight profiler. And what it does is it just watches to see what your app does. And it goes, hey, if I see this method crashes 100 times, well, I'll flag that. That's a problem. And in fact, I can even do more than just flag that as a problem. I can actually take a dump file for you. And so when you see that problem, I can give you more data. And so I kind of think of this as like AI for diagnosing your application. The same way, we can look at methods in your application, and maybe those methods sometimes, by default, maybe it runs 30 milliseconds all the time. And then one day it starts taking 1,000 milliseconds. We can flag that for you as well. We can actually look at that. The AI says, I notice this method is suddenly returning a lot slower than it was in the past. Maybe I'll take a snapshot of that as well and give that to you. And then the final point is, we have all that data. You should be able to actually see that data in Visual Studio. So imagine being able to move your mouse over methods in Visual Studio. And as you do, we'll show you how many times the method was called. We'll show you how many times it succeeded, how many times it failed, how long it took to run, right in Visual Studio. And even better, another thing is, one of the challenges of trying to build cloud apps is when you actually want to debug your app, you don't want to really attach the debugger to a running app, because if you do, the breakpoint hits, the app stops. And so we introduced this new feature called snap points, which instead of taking a breakpoint, we actually make a snapshot of your application at that point in time. So let's go take a look at what some of that looks like. So what I've got here is this is also kind of a cool view as well. Hopefully the portal will be kind to me. So that view, the view that I'm opening, is something we call an app map. Traditionally, Azure is just basically a pile of resources. So here's my list of thousands of storage accounts and thousands of websites and VMs and all these things in the cloud. And that's not really how I, a developer, think about this stuff. As a developer, I really think of this more as I've got an app that's my front end. I've got a piece of my app that's the back end. It talks to a SQL database. And so we built this intelligent view inside of Azure where we can actually show you the way your app actually is really represented. So let's go click a few things here. So this is showing my availability of my entire app. It's 96%, pretty good. It's got my front end, it's got my back end, it's got my SQL database. I know Scott showed some of this in the keynote on Sunday, but I'm going to show more than Scott showed. So let's click here on this one. And I've got this system component Win32 exception here. So if I drill into this, I'll get the full exception here with some other cool data too. If you look, you know, I'm showing, hey, I know this method. This is the method that failed. It was called from San Antonio with this IP in Texas from a PC. So you got rich analytic data. I can then say I want to show the telemetry for this particular error. And this brings up a view that's something new that we're doing as well. And what this basically shows me over here is this is going to show me some interesting stuff here. Oops. Notice that this things like this. I say, OK, I'm in the front end, about to call the back end. In the back end, about to call the back end. That means the database. So what we've done is we've actually put what we call correlation IDs through all of your apps running here. And so when I show a trace, I don't have to show a trace of just the one app. I can tie the trace of each of the apps together. So if you've got your web front end, you've got your back end, you've got your microservices, and you make a call here and it goes all the way through and crashes somewhere, I can show you the entire pipeline all the way back. Not only can I do that, but if you do have an error, I can actually have an error page in your web app that has what we call a correlation ID. And with that correlation ID, you can come to the portal, search for it, and we'll find you the error that happened on for that particular user. And that's what we can do with correlation IDs. So let me close this out. Go back to the app view. And this is where things get even cooler. So I've got my front end app here. And I'm going to look at this index out of range exception. So anything in this list over here is the ones that our profiler is finding for us. It's got my exception. Here's my call stack. But notice there's this new button, Open Debug Snapshot. So what, as I said before, what happens is when the profiler detects that there's an issue, it actually will tell the back end to make a snapshot. So that quickly saves a dump of a mini dump of the application that you can then take a look at. This is still a little rough today, the view that we have here. Hopefully it will fill in. There it goes. But what we'll show here is we'll show your full call stack, and you can click every entry in the call stack. And as you do, we can then open that up. I love the internet here. We can open that up and show you all the variables and stuff right in the web portal. In the long run, we'll get to a point where you can actually show you the source code here as well. Now, the good news is, while this is doing this, there's also this awesome button up here, which is the download snapshot. Oh, there we go, finally. So if I look down here, you can see the locals, you can see the call stack, I can click on these things. But I've actually already clicked the download button, expecting the internet here to be not awesome. And so let's do this. Close these out. Go to my downloads. I've got that snapshot. And we've been working on this for a couple months. And so obviously now I can say debug with manage it only. And it's good. Ah. Fail on me. It would be helpful if I actually had the right app open. Give this a second. Everything happy? And then I've got a demo after this that's even better than this. This is a cool demo, but this is just a piece of what we're going to do. So here I am, debug managed. And so now you can see me, I'm in here, in VS. I get the exact same exception I had in the portal. Right here in VS, it's thrown up on the screen, and I have access to the whole call stack. Everything's here. So my life as a developer is great. I can now really see all the details and errors when errors happen versus getting a single entry in like an event log or a log file. So this flows great when you see it. It's like, hey, it's all in the portal, but the portal is making the decision when it's going to take one of those snapshots, not me. So let's look at this a different way. I'm going to switch machines here in a second. Let's make sure everything's healthy. Can we switch to machine number one, guys? Awesome. Okay, so now I've got the visitor app running in Azure App Service on my machine here. And if I try this app, let's go click on Dan. I get an error. Something's wrong here. So this is an app running in production, so I don't want to stop it. So let's open it in Visual Studio. So what's going to happen is I open this code in Visual Studio, and all my traditional options are here. I could actually attach to the debugger remotely if I wanted to the running instance of the application, but that would break the app. This is the method that gets the visitor when I click on the thing over there. And so what I'm going to do now is I have this new option in my download menu or my debug menu here. Let's go here. There is now, let's go debug. Notice there is launch snapshot debugger. So when VS 2017 15.3 ships this summer, it's going to have this feature built into it. And you can launch the snapshot debugger. So let's try that. So this is the debugger where we won't actually stop the running application. We are going to give ourselves the ability to take snapshots whenever we want. So notice it says Visual Studio is debugging an application running in Azure. Learn more. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a snap point in. So if I click over here, There's my snap point. And notice that my debug, what normally says debug application, now says start collection. Because in this world, I'm not actually going to do a breakpoint. I'm actually going to tell it to give me a snapshot when this line hits. So let's click over here and say start collection. Why it's doing that to me. And let's collect on that line. Let's do update collection. So let's try this. Notice that a snapshot came in when I ran that code. There's a snapshot there. The app is still running. If I come over here, I can still click around. The app's not stopped, but I have a snapshot. I can now double-click the snapshot. I can attach the debugger to the dump file that we just grabbed from that snapshot. And there you see. I'm on that line. Parts is null. There's visitor, all the information. Live in the browser, or live in Visual Studio, and the app is completely running. This is not cool, guys. I mean, so we are going to give you the ability to debug running applications on your with Visual Studio without stopping the actual application by using snap points. To me, I think it's one of the coolest features that we have in 2017, and I am super excited about it. So, as I said, later this summer you'll get this, and it is awesome. So let's go back to machine number two, guys. Can we do the questions afterwards, please? So, I just want to get through the material, and then we can do questions afterwards. So, let me stop debugging here. And let's go back over here. So I think that's super, super cool, and I'm really, really happy to have that. So who in the room uses ReSharper? Oh, you guys. So are people aware that we've done a lot of work in VS 2017 to actually build a lot of ReSharper into VS? Any hands up for that? I see one or two, a few. We actually done a ton of work in 2017. And I will actually jump back to the slides for a second just to show something here. So one of the things that we care about as a team is I don't want people to have to install extensions in VS to have a great editor experience. And so we have actually been working very, very heavily to, let me grab this URL here. We've been working super hard to build a lot of the things that you would want in an editor that you're probably installing things like ReSharper or other extensions for directly into VS. And we have a page on our site that actually has a cheat sheet that will actually show you what the command is in VS versus the command in ReSharper. And so you can come and grab this off our site. It's got an awesome cheat sheet guide of the product there. And we also have, somewhere at the bottom here, where do we stick this? There's also a extension we have. Oh, it's actually in the cheat sheet. The cheat sheet has a link to an extension we have that will actually remap Visual Studio. It'll take the ReSharper commands and map them directly to our features. So if you want to try it, I highly recommend and try it. And you might find out that you don't need third-party extensions to make your app run awesome on the product. So please try that. From us, The reason we're putting that stuff in is because we want VS to be small and fast and quick and lean and mean, and installing a bunch of extensions to get stuff to work should not be required. So, as I said, we actually did a lot of work to improve install experience, performance, faster navigation. Navigation. Was anybody here in my talk earlier today about when I showed code styles? Two. I might do that code style demo again. Three or four. We also added something called code style that allows you to put rules about how you want your code formatted and how you want people to actually write code directly into VS. Before, it's all in tools options, and it doesn't really follow your project like it should. So now you can actually, instead of having those in the settings in VS, you can put those in your project. We have live unit testing. I did a demo of that this morning. That allows you to actually have your unit test running as you actually are writing code. And it's pretty cool because it actually shows you on the left-hand side of the screen, it shows you if unit testing is turned on or off, or if you have unit tests for each method, what's passing and what's failing. It's smart tech as well. It actually only runs the tests that we think need to be run based on the code that you're changing. We run it outside of Visual Studio, so it doesn't use memory in VS. It's a really cool feature. We added a whole bunch more of refactoring and quick fixes, and we added support for C# 7, which I showed this morning as well, and I might show a little bit of that. There's a whole bunch more of this coming in Update 3 later this year. Big thing is we just added .NET Core support for live unit testing, so it works in more of our projects. And you can see we have code style enforcement on build, so not only can we have it when you're using it as a developer, but we can make sure it's actually hooked up for builds as well. You saw some of the live diagnostics. So let's move on. This is something that really excites me as well. My team is heavily involved in this. Is we announced the RTM of Visual Studio for the Mac at Build. And here's why it's interesting to me is our goal is, I don't care what machine you're on, if you're on a Mac or on Windows, I saw a few Macs in here. We want you to have a great .NET experience no matter where you're at. And so VS for Mac fully supports .NET Core, and it fully supports all the Xamarin type projects. And it's not just like it's a clone of VS or it's Xamarin Studio rebranded. This actually, we are code sharing heavily between the two products. So we took all of the project templates that we have in VS. They're now mapped into Visual Studio for Mac. We took the exact HTML, CSS, and JSON editors from Visual Studio and dropped them in here as well. The same debugger is in here, and all the same Azure Publish infrastructure is here as well. And in the future, sometime, I hope later this year, we will take the same JavaScript editor from Visual Studio and put it into Visual Studio for Mac and the same Razor editor for your ASP.NET projects. And so the goal is to make sure that if you move between machines, you get a very similar experience. And as I mentioned before, we have full .NET Core tooling today and Visual Studio for Mac, and this means you can round trip. You can have one developer on the Mac, one developer on Windows. They're all sharing code and source control, and things just work. We have all of the Docker tooling that we built into Visual Studio is now in VS for Mac as well. All the app service publishing, whether it's app service or app service containers, is in VS for Mac. And I might do an Azure Functions demo in a little bit. And Azure Functions is in VS for the Mac as well. And so I'll jump over here. And if we can switch to machine number 5, guys. Cool. So here is Visual Studio for Mac. And as I was saying before, I can do File New Solution. And down here, here's all my .NET Core projects. I can say I want to build a ASP.NET Core web application. My web. Let's open the solution up. And just to show this is really real, let's go into my controller. And let's put a breakpoint over here. And just like VS, I can say start with debugging. debugger wants privileges. There, my app is running on the Mac. I hit the About. Breakpoint fires. Same experience as you would expect on a Windows machine. Let's just stop it. And I was going to show one more thing. I talked about containers this morning. I can also take the same application, and I can add Docker support to it, which means now, even on my Mac, I've got, we'll just do the same demo again. So now I'm in a container, and I'll say start with debugging, and you'll see at the top of the screen here, if you can see that, it's going to start building a Docker image. And Docker is a great way to run .NET Core applications. There's a console here, and I can actually say Docker images. There's my web app there, so it's created a virtual machine for me on the fly as part of doing that work. It's now launched the virtual machine. I click About. My debugger fires. So whether I'm running the app natively on the Mac, I'm running the app on Linux on the Mac, everything works just like you would expect it to. I think that if you guys use Macs, .NET is there. So we'll switch back to machine number two. So that was VS for the Mac. Said super happy about that. I'll show one more thing, and then I'm going to go back and show one of these code things. So another thing that we hear all the time is developers, who in the room has heard about serverless computing? Bunch of folks. Serverless computing, the idea behind serverless computing is instead of building these web apps or these applications with controllers and all that stuff, I just want to go build the actual function that does something for me. These are pretty cool because you just write the function and you can just publish the function up by itself without the rest of an application. You can scale these things up and down as much as you want. You can set them to scale up and down on the fly. We've built into VS 2017 15.3. We have full support for these things built in. If anybody's tried these before, they were based on what we call CSX files. The problem with CSX files is you didn't get all the features of Visual Studio in those files. We've now moved these projects to be .NET class libraries, and because of that, they get all of the VS features. IntelliSense, P2P references, unit testing, code analysis, third-party extensions, and we're adding support for both, we already had .NET Framework support, we're adding support for .NET Core. You can also publish right from VS with these things, and we give you local and remote debugging. And I'll just quickly show you what this looks like, and then we'll go do a demo of some of the tooling stuff. So let me close this out. And I think in my recent list, I might have one of these that I built. I do. So the notion behind functions, and this is a very basic looking function here, and I'll show you how I got here. This is a function that says, let's see, I have Azure Storage Explorer running. I have a queue in Azure Storage. And what I want to do is I want to say anytime something deposits somebody, something is put in that queue, I want my C# code to run. And this is pretty simple. If you look here, what I've got here is I've got some stuff here saying here's my method. And I want my method to run when the queue called demo. Let's go back to my Storage Explorer. There's my demo queue. And then it needs a connection string, which we have stuck over here. You're welcome to take a picture because it'll be gone. Take that GUID or whatever that is. I give it a connection string, and that's it. All I've done is I just wrote a function, and I put an attribute on it saying it's a function called Qtrigger C#. And when something gets dropped into that queue, my code runs. And in this case, all the code does is actually just logs it to the output. But let's put a breakpoint in there. And as I said, we give you today, if you actually try to use functions, your real experience is you're going to go to the portal and you're going to go like paste some code in there and pray that it runs. If you do it this way, you get to try everything locally before you actually publish. So I can do a start debugging. And you'll see we basically have what we do is we run the same function code that runs in the cloud locally on the machine here. So you can see the function runtime booting up, lightning bolt. Okay. So now what I should be able to do is just come over here, and I should be able to add a message. And as soon as I add my message, boom, you see my function calls. And so I've got this great local debugging story where I can just go throw stuff in the Storage Explorer, try it. Let's stop this, and I will show one more thing about this. If I right-click over here and I click Add, New Item, because this is a function app, I can click this to select a function. And you can see I've got a whole variety of different functions that I can actually add here. I can say when a blob is hit, when something hits an event hub, if there's a webhook, that's just when you a URL is called, HTTP triggers, service bus, I can do timers. So there's a whole variety of these things. And you can do some pretty cool stuff with it. I mean, even the queuing stuff is pretty snazzy, because if I'm going to build a scalable application, I'm going to have a front end that puts work items into a queue, and then my serverless computing boots up and just takes the item from the queue, does the work, and it's done. And as I said, I can scale that up and down however I want to scale it up and down. So that's Azure Functions. Anytime I talk about things, I want to talk about what's coming next. So there's a whole bunch of stuff coming next from the team right now. First off, my biggest complaint about .NET as the owner of this tech is interloop. That's a term we have inside of Microsoft. Interloop is when you make a code change and you control F5, or you make a code change and you refresh your browser, how long does that take in our tech? Our tech is a little bit too slow, in my opinion. So that's an area you're going to see later this year us do a lot of work on to make faster. Small standalone apps. With .NET Core, we give you the ability to build apps that run on Windows, Mac, and Linux. I'd love to give you the ability to make console applications that are self-contained and super small. Imagine building a utility that you build, and you make three versions of it, and it runs on all the platforms, and it's really super small. It's a single exe. So that's something we want to do. We want to have support for native. Being able to take your .NET applications and turn them into fully native applications. It doesn't really, a lot of times customers ask me, is that going to increase the speed of your application? Our jitter is actually really good, so it doesn't really change the perf of the app for the most part, but what it does is it lowers the memory footprint of your app by about half, because we don't have to boot the jitter up. It also gives you the ability of having a single exe for your application, so that's an area that we really care about. Tooling and libraries. Who in here wants cross-platform UI? Not as many hands as I would expect. UI is something we hear from customers, and Miguel de Casa at the Build Conference showed Xamarin Forms running on Linux, Windows, and Mac. And so I think that's an area you're going to see us have stuff. If you've ever used Node or you've ever used NPM, they have the ability to actually install what we call global tools. You can say npm install something, -g, and then that lives on your command line. So we want to have something like that in the .NET world as well, where you can actually have a NuGet package with some code, and you basically, anybody can npm that or NuGet that to their machine and just run that code. Machine learning and artificial intelligence. If you saw the Build conference or you saw the Google I/O conference, both companies showed a lot of stuff about ML and AI. And we want to make sure that .NET is a great platform for building those types of applications, as you're going to see us do some investments there. And then, of course, even though we support Linux, there's work for us still to do on the diagnostic side of Linux. And then I love to support IoT and ARM. And so if you want to run .NET on a Raspberry Pi, you can actually get that code today from our GitHub. We have stuff up there today that lets you do that. the Tizen stuff that I mentioned earlier in the talk, Samsung has actually been porting .NET Core to ARM32, and so at some point we'll take that and take it the rest of the way. This is what I was mentioning, Tizen. They actually, for their TVs and their appliances and their smart devices, you know, they've got .NET support. They're on Preview 3 right now. They got Visual Studio tooling. It's really cool. They just had a developer conference last week on that stuff. And then this is something that we're doing. Late September, we have .NET Conf. It's a three-day virtual conference. About half of it will be people from Microsoft, and the other half will be a lot of the folks that you see today walking around this conference and doing talks. So it's half community, half Microsoft. So save the date for that. That'll be virtual, stream it in your office. And then, of course, as I was going to say, try out the bits today. Take a picture of the screen if you want those URLs. Or just Google for any of those things, .NET Core 2. You can grab it today. It requires VS 2017 Update 3 Preview, which, as I said, is fully side-by-side. Please go to my .NET architecture extra page and let me hear what you would like us to add in the future. And then, as I said, I've got a cheat sheet for my extensions. And that is that. So I have 4 minutes left. And what can I do in 4 minutes? So let's do this. I'll show one feature in the next 4 minutes. So I'm going to create a new project. Let's just create a .NET Core, let's create a regular class console app here. So here's my console app, not super exciting. I mentioned to some folks earlier today that if you go to Tools and you go to Options and I drill down the text editor and I go to C Sharp, drill, code style, there's all these rules that are up here. And I can set rules on these things. So it's like, as a developer, like this is the one I was showing this morning, there's var preferences. Var preferences is right there. For built-in types, maybe in your org, I like var personally, but I could say, I don't want you to do that. It's going to be an error if you do var. And that's a code style. So as a team, you guys might all come and figure out what spacing and tabbing and all the things that you want. Historically, you've had to configure all of this in this options dialog box. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to come over here, close that out. I happen to have an editor config file sitting here, and I'm going to drag that in here. And so with VS 2017, we now have the ability to set these types of rules in a text file that you drop in your projects or your solutions. In this case, notice here what it says is I'm at the root of the app. I want this to affect all star.cs files. It could be star.vb. I want my indent style to be spaces. And I want to say that var for built-in types, nope, it's not allowed in our org. It's set to false. And if I use it, it's an error. And so after I do this, I need to close and open this. Now if I do something like var I equals 5, oops, use explicit type. If I do a build, it shows up as an error. And so we have the ability for you to do this, and basically there's a whole pile of these things you can do. So I've got a URL here. You can just search code styles VS 2017. You'll find this stuff. And here's all the rules that you can actually set for your projects. And to me, I think this is awesome. This allows teams to basically put one of these files in the root of their projects and solutions, and basically set the rules on how people do it on a project-by-project basis, which is cool, because in some cases at Microsoft, I might be on one team, and I share some code from another team Well, my team uses different practices, but when I work in their files, I use their practices. When I work in my files, I use my practices. And so from this URL, you'll see there are tons. Basically, everything I showed in that dialog box is available here. So these are editor config files in VS 2017. So it is 3:00, and so I'm out of time, but I want to thank you guys so much for being here today, and please come ask any questions afterwards.